Good morning. My name is Ashley, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the TechNeap FMC 2019 guidance call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Matthew Seinsheimer, you may begin your conference.
Good afternoon, and welcome to TechNeap FMC's 2019 financial guidance conference call. I'd like to caution you with respect to any forward-looking statements made during this call. Although these forward-looking statements are based on our current expectations, beliefs, and assumptions regarding future developments and business conditions, they are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these statements. Known material factors that could cause our actual results to differ from our projected results are described in our most recent 10-K, most recent 10-Q, and other periodic filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the French AMF, and the U.K. Financial Conduct Authority. We wish to caution you not to place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements which speak only as of the date hereof. We undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any of our forward-looking statements after the date they are made, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Yesterday, we released our 2019 financial guidance as well as an accompanying presentation that provides additional commentary on our outlook for the business segments. Both documents are available in the investor relations section of our website at www.techneapfmc.com. Briefly summarizing the segment highlights, for Subsea, we see revenue in a range of $5.4 billion-$5.7 billion with adjusted EBITDA margin of at least 11%. For onshore-offshore, revenue in a range of $5.7 billion-$6 billion with adjusted EBITDA margin of at least 12%. And for surface technologies, revenue in a range of $1.7 billion-$1.8 billion with adjusted EBITDA margin of at least 17%. The format for today's call will be a question and answer session with Doug Pferdehirt, Chief Executive Officer, and Marianne Manning, Chief Financial Officer. Given our brief introductory remarks and the unique focus of today's conversation, the call will last approximately 30 minutes. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up to maximize the number of participants during the call. Operator, you may now begin the Q&A session.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And your first question comes from James Evans with Exane BNP Paribas.
Morning. Thanks for hosting this call, and thanks for taking my question. So it's really around subsea margins. Obviously, 2018, you've been correct. It's the trough for revenues. 2019, you know, we're talking about lower margins. It's too early to talk about 2020, but what do we need to see over the next 6 to 9 months to see that this is the trough for margins and we get an improvement coming through in 2020? Do we need to hear about pricing improving, or can we get there on operational leverage by itself? Thanks.
Hey, James, thank you very much for the question and for participating in today's call. When we look at 2019, I think there's a few things that we'll be certainly observing, and I'm sure you'll be focused on as well. And the first, indeed, will be, you know, the level of activity. We see an increasing level of activity. We've seen the, certainly for our company, we have seen the improvement in our book-to-bill over the last several quarters, 5 quarters, and we've seen the improvement in our backlog as well in the subsea business. What we believe or what we're anticipating in 2019 is continued strong activity in terms of the number of project FIDs in the small to mid-sized type projects, but we also see an increasing number of the larger greenfield subsea projects as well. So that's certainly one thing that, you know, we'll be watching, and the timing of that inbound. Obviously, if it was more biased to the first half of the year versus the second half of the year, that would be more favorable for 2020 as well. And we would not rule that out, by the way. And in terms of The competitive landscape, which, as you know, we are not exposed to for 100% of our business. Actually, we have the least exposure to the competitive tendering market of our competitors because of the strength of our subsea services offering. Our alliance partners and the direct awards we receive from our alliance partners, as well as our unique integrated iEPCI model where we direct convert an iEPCI project from an integrated FEED project, thus capturing the benefit for ourselves and for the customer through the uniqueness of our offering, not through a competitive tender. But for that portion that is exposed to the competitive market, we would expect in 19 to see more discipline in the market. We're beginning to see that. We are certainly through 2018 saw improvement, but we expect 2019 for there to be real pricing discipline in the market, not just from ourselves, which we have continued to show leadership in terms of pricing discipline, but from the entire market as the activity continues to increase, and I believe it will certainly influence the behavior of others as well. And then finally, the differentiation of our business. You know, our ability now to be able to deliver Subsea 2.0 technology or the next generation of subsea technology into our tenders. I think we mentioned this earlier. You might recall over 50% of the FEED studies that we have been conducting in 2018 now include Subsea 2.0, so we'll start to see some of that flow through in the coming years, as well as the strength of our iEPCI offering. And we mentioned in the slide deck associated with the earnings guidance this morning that we anticipate an increase in both Subsea 2.0 awards and iEPCI awards in 2019, and that will bode well for 2020.
Thank you. I'll stop there.
Your next question comes from Dan Boyd with BMO Capital Markets.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Thanks, Doug. I'm going to kind of follow up there because I think that's the important question for the call today is the outlook for subsea margins. So presumably, if we get the order set to follow through next year and revenue continues to grow into 2020, can we see the trough in margins in 2019? And I guess the question is also, what's the incremental margin uplift you think we can get just from fixed cost absorption alone if revenue continues to grow?
So the short answer, Dan, thank you for the question. The short answer is yes. I go back to the three points I made earlier, though, and not all of those are within our internal control. And again, I think there needs to be a greater focus on pricing discipline across the sector. There's been some occasional irrational pricing when it comes to certain contracts, and I think that should dissipate in 2019. We certainly would expect it to. There is quite a bit of leverage that one can receive as they start to get that incremental volume. We obviously model that and feel quite confident that with the adjustments that we've already made to our cost base, both through the benefits of the merger synergies, which were unique to our company because we made the bold move to create TechnipFMC at the time that we did, and now realizing our target by the end of 2018 is to realize over $400 million of pre-tax cost synergies, an additional $50 million in 2019, plus other ongoing initiatives we're doing to increase the operating efficiency of the company beyond that of the merger-related synergies. We would expect to see strong leverage as we start to see that incremental activity come back in, specifically that incremental activity associated with integrated projects. Why is that? We have said from the beginning that our strategy was not to chase market share with our fleet, that right now the competitive market on vessel-only or installation-type contracts, it has very low margins. We have said that we were going to prioritize our fleet to focus on those contracts where we could create the greatest returns and provide the best performance for our clients in terms of their project economics. And that's around the iEPCI contracts. The benefit there is you have one company that has both can adjust the manufacturing cadence as well as the fleet availability and synchronize the two together. That allows us to do some really unique things, like most recently on the Shell Caicos project, shorten the project delivery by 1 year, deliver a project 1 year ahead of schedule, which obviously helps accelerate the improvement in our fleet utilization if we're able to do more projects like that, which are really The only way we're able to do that, or the only way the industry is able to realize that benefit, is through the unique integrated IPCI offering that we have at Technip FMC.
Okay. Thanks for all that color. I guess, you know, and like you said, the short answer is yes, margins can increase in 2020 just from revenue growth alone, even if you don't get a lot of pricing. Fair.
Yes. I just want to caveat it, Dan, by there has to be a level of pricing discipline in the market that we have not experienced in 2018.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Raf Pulian with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just one question from me, and maybe changing tack slightly from subsidy margins to if we can talk about Yamal, which seems like it's been a phenomenal success in terms of early delivery, and now that Train 3 is up and running and producing, could I ask, and maybe a question to Marianne, over what period do you think that the Yamal effect on the balance sheet will start to become, you know, frankly, immaterial? You know, is this 6 months out, or do we have to wait for the end of the year, or is it actually when everything is done on Yamal? Thank you very much.
Yeah, good morning, Rob, and thanks for the question around cash flow. So with respect to Yamal, I would say for 2019, probably the largest change that we'll see is in 2019, and we'll see that step down in 2020. So by the end of 19, I think, you know, the ability for you to have even greater visibility than you do today will be there. You know, when we think about our cash flow from operations this year, and we're saying obviously cash flow is positive, the great success and the good project capability of Yamal contributes to that cash flow. Cash flow from operations coming from the Yamal project, as we see, is actually negative. If you will allow me to exclude Yamal from cash flow from operations, then we're probably looking at the balance of those businesses, those being obviously remaining onshore, offshore, subsea, and our surface technologies business, as being able to contribute in a range of about $400 to $500 million positive cash flow this year. So for 2020, there will be a much, much smaller impact from Yamal as we complete that project.
That's extremely helpful. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful Christmas. I'll turn it over.
Your next question comes from Kurt Hallead with RBC.
Yes, good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon here. Good morning to you, Kurt.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug. Hey, Doug, I wanted to maybe try to get a sense from where you sit in the conversations that you have with your customer base and client base and really just try to maybe calibrate views on it, right? Everybody is, at least the investor base, is very, very concerned about the outlook with respect to oil prices and what that may mean with respect to, E&P spending activity. What is your sense when you have your conversations with some of the larger oil companies, and do the larger oil companies seem to be spooked here with the change, radical change in oil prices that occurred, you know, over the last couple of months? Just hoping you can provide some sanity or sense of sanity to what's been going on over the last couple of months here.
Kurt, I'm not sure I can do that. That's a big ask, but like you, it's certainly been, since we last talked in October, you know, there's clearly been some pretty unanticipated changes in the marketplace. But let me answer your question specifically, and it's a very timely question. I had two such conversations just this week, and we're kind of doing our end of the year, check-ins with our key clients and receiving their feedback and their insight. On a net-net basis, there's an acknowledgement and recognition of such, but they're really comfortable in the projects that we're looking at. And we'll answer it specific to subsea, but then I want to add a little bit on the downstream side as well. They're quite comfortable with the improvement that we've been able to make in the project economics, and now the proven success that we have had with the IEPCI markets or projects by being the only company to have actually delivered an IEPCI project, that they really do understand and see the value that can be done and how we are making the long cycle, short cycle, and how we are having a dramatic improvement in the project economics. These offshore projects are sitting on very large, very high quality reservoirs, and the ability to be able to move forward and bring on those assets, which will deliver for a long time with very high returns, is still very attractive to our clients. So net-net, no, there has not been a significant change. It's part of the conversation. We have that conversation. But they really see the structural changes that are being made in terms of making these projects sustainable and economical at a lower oil price. One thing that is quite unique in the conversation, though, and this happened, again, on several occasions as I've been making this round, there's a fair part of the conversation, if not a majority of the conversation, really wanting to understand our capacity and our ability to be able to meet our requirements needs. So, in one such case specifically, I mean, the conversation was, let's map out together our project kind of planning scenario, your capacity, because we want to make sure that TechnipFMC is in a position to handle the growth that we are going to be delivering over the next several years in this environment. So very real conversation, very timely conversation, and a conversation that ended very well. I think both the client and we were quite satisfied with that discussion. I think it's also important to talk just for briefly, Kurt, about the downstream market. It's been quite resilient. We've emphasized it every quarter, but I'll just emphasize it again. And we haven't finished the year, and we'll report out when on our Q4 call. But the downstream sector has been quite resilient for us. We targeted a specific set of projects where we were in the direct negotiation or where we had conducted the FEED study and therefore had a much higher level of confidence in our ability to be able to deliver the project with the best economics and returns for the client and for ourselves. And we've secured those projects. So, there's a lot of focus on the downstream side as well in terms of client spending. And as TechnipFMC, we're able to capture both that upstream activity as well as that downstream activity.
Okay, great, Doug. Appreciate that color. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Ghulami Dalabi with Societe Generale.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my questions. Doug, I understand quite well that you are not necessarily chasing installation-only projects going forward. So I would like to know what is your current thought process regarding your fleet. Do you think it has the right size, or could it be maybe downsized a little bit? And also, I would like to ask a very simple question about the status of the PLSVs. I think a seventh PLSV started to contribute in June. Where are we regarding your PLSVs in Brazil? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. And I just want to clarify, it's not that we won't participate in what used to be, we don't use the terminology anymore because we've redefined the market now as a single company, but, the SURF-type contracts in the past, certainly we target those, but we only will target those and we will only participate to an economic threshold that benefits us and our shareholders. So, in other words, we won't chase those contracts because we have other levers to pull. We have other opportunities. We're not a vessel-only company. So to be specific, we have inbounded, there has been some announcements recently that you may be aware of some installation contracts. There may be some others in the very near future that we're very proud of. They're good contracts. They met our economical requirements. They're for the clients that we want to participate, for the right clients, for the right projects that we consider to be strategic. What we said was that we would prioritize the IEPCI opportunities, not that we would not work specifically on the others. In terms of the fleet in Brazil, it continues to evolve. As you know, as you mentioned, we added the one vessel in 2018 under a long-term contract. There will be another vessel that will be coming on in 2019 under a long-term contract. We do have some vessels that are underutilized, and we do have some vessels that are coming off contract in the Brazil market. And we are working on a strategy as we speak to either secure additional work for those vessels in Brazil, some of which may be coming from the new activity that's the new activity be outside of Petrobras that is coming into the marketplace. And, you know, we announced the Equinor contract that we had won previously, and there may be others that you'll be hearing about in the future. Or we'll look at opportunities to remove some of those vessels from the fleet or to take some of those vessels and deploy those outside of Brazil, and in some cases, replacing leased vessels, that could be a very good economic benefit for our company to do so.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Sean Meakim with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thanks. Doug, one point in the deck that stood out to me was the expectation that average project size will be up year on year in subsea. And I was just curious if you could just help us unpack that a little bit. How should we think about the mix of iEPCI and subsea 2.0 projects versus the legacy procurement projects? You know, thinking about how that mix influences that call for average project size to be moving upward year over year.
Thanks, Sean. You know, to be fair, I don't think it's a quite. I know it may be perceived as a bullish call, but really, I'm not. We're not coming off of a base of a lot of large projects being called off in 17 and 18. There were some, but you know, we're not coming off of a big base. You know, we're just looking go all the way back to our opportunity map that we publish every quarter. You know, we just see some of the larger projects likely to move forward in 2019. So the net mix, if you just kind of do the math over the last couple of years, as you know, we've had a very strong and very resilient level of smaller awards, if you will, awards that we don't announce that are below the threshold for announcement. We expect those to continue. Matter of fact, you know, in one of the conversations that I had recently, going back to Kurt's question with another customer, you know, it was all about, you know, how do we actually ramp up that activity? They really like the 14-month delivered, installed on the seabed, fully commissioned, one contract, one company, TechnipFMC. So they kind of opened up their entire portfolio and said, what can you do for us, and how quickly could you do it, because they see that opportunity and the returns from those projects. But some of the other projects are just the bigger legacy projects that have been out there that we feel have a higher likelihood to move forward in 2019. Regarding our mix specifically, yes, we expect a higher component of our mix to come from iEPCI. I think we're very confident in that. And, you know, recall, we already took a pretty aggressive target for 2018, and now we're seeing it's going to grow even more than that. A lot of those being direct awards to our from clients that we have done the integrated FEED study on, being direct awarded to our company. So, you know, that becomes quite material, particularly given the fact that we're the market leader, as well as the now starting to see the Subsea 2.0 awards starting to flow through. And when you put iEPCI and Subsea 2.0 together, it really you just get more benefit on a larger project just from the pure math behind it. You know, we believe that we'll be able to start to unlock the potential of some of those larger projects and larger opportunities. Again, some that are on the map that we publish, some that are not on the map because they're proprietary projects that we're working on with our clients that we think could also come through in 2019.
Great. Thank you for that feedback.
Your next question comes from Byron Pope with Tudor, Pickering, Holt.
Good afternoon. Doug, just one quick question on surface technologies. As I look at one of the charts in your slide deck, I just wanted to understand the progression as we step through the year, because there are some FTI product lines that benefit just from higher completions activity, not necessarily from new capital equipment being ordered. So could you just frame the drivers of the growth for the North American part of surface technologies as you see them progressing through the course of the year?
Actually, I think you summed it up very well, probably better than I could, but I'll try to add to it. There's really nothing that you haven't already said. I think that's important to note that the chart that we included, or the PowerPoint presentation that we included, the one on Surface Technologies, that is showing the increment of that completions-related revenue, or if you will, where we're able to get more utilization of our assets related to the fracking activity, which is not part of the capital, you know, the capital program, or if you will, product sales to our clients, which part of our activity, as you said, is associated with that. So this is higher utilization, higher turns, and therefore, obviously, we get quite a benefit from that, of those assets. You can see it's back end loaded. I mean, you know, one of the assumptions in our Surface Technologies plan is that there will be increased level of activity around that will drive our completions related revenue from Surface Technologies, those assets that we just discussed. And you know, clearly we included our outlook. I'm sure we won't be correct. I don't think anybody could be correct on a quarterly basis, but we're showing the trend and how we have how we look at the market and just giving you that additional insight. I think it's also important to look at the stack bar chart to the left, and it also shows that we have a really strong balance between our North America business and the business outside of North America. And the business right. outside of North America will we have seen the inflection and believe we will continue to see an inflection in activity. Pricing will come later, but that obviously has a lot of leverage as well. And then probably the most exciting thing on the slide is some of our new initiatives we're starting to really see come to fruition in the North America market. And this is around technology, and this is around, again, the integrated offering. And the simplest way to think of it is what we have done in subsea, we believe there is an opportunity to do the same thing in the surface market, particularly in the North America unconventional market, but really globally, which is to look at how we can use technology and how we can use an integrated offering to improve the efficiency and the cost associated with all of the activities that occur, if you will, on this, you know, above ground, much like others have integrated the subsurface in terms of the drilling and the fracking of the wells. There's a huge opportunity now to do the same thing in terms of the production phase of the well, and we are uniquely positioned to do that. And we're beginning to see the traction of that in the market and expect to see more in 2019.
That's helpful. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Your next question comes from Michael Ray with Redburn.
Yeah, hi there. Two questions, if I could. Just on the CapEx of $400 million, looks to be stepping up a bit year over year. Can you just give us a quick run through of what you're investing in? And would you say that 400 is more like a normal CapEx level for the business compared to this year's level? And the second one, just briefly, just on contract awards, I mean, have you moved to a policy of not really announcing contracts anymore? The reason I ask is just that I've seen press articles about wins in Mozambique recently, and I think Neste said yesterday that you're building their biodiesel plant in Singapore. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you also got a Saudi LTA in the past few weeks. So I'm just wondering if there's been some kind of change of policy. Thank you.
Sure, thank you. So I'll be brief everyone can get a chance to ask a question. In terms of the capital budget, I would think of it this way. I would say $300 million is really what we would call kind of the normalized maintenance level of capital spending for our company. So what you're really seeing is an incremental $100 million. That incremental $100 million is really focused on two businesses, subsea services, which is the majority, which is where we will be spending to support the compounded annual growth rate that we've announced, double-digit compounded annual growth rate for that business. So it'll be additional assets into that business, as well as you're going to see some enhanced offerings that we'll be bringing to the market in 2019 that are very exciting for our company. And the other area will be in surface technologies. In surface technologies, I talked about the increased activity from our non-North American activity. That will, for us, primarily come from the Middle East. So we are making additional investments in the Middle East to support the growth of that business, particularly within the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. As well as in North America, when we were talking earlier about moving more towards the integrated model and more towards what we call modularized automated production facilities, there'll be additional capital spending to support the growth of that business. So $300 million maintenance level, $100 million growth, based around subsea services and surface technologies in North America, both two areas that will drive returns for our company. In terms of the contract awards, no, there has been no change in our policy. Sometimes our clients ask us to allow them to announce first, and sometimes they ask us not to announce until they have announced everything they intend to announce. So what it is it's simply us following. We will always follow our customers. We will always follow their lead. But I appreciate you recognizing those that have been those contracts that you referenced. We may indeed be having an announcement, but it'll be a follow-up announcement, and that's simply because what the client has asked us to do. But thanks for pointing those out. We're very proud.
Thanks a lot.
Your last question comes from James Wicklund with Credit Suisse.
Good morning, guys. I think this is very helpful, and obviously the market is viewing this as very positive, so congratulations. Doug, what I want to ask is, you started this process, I'm sure, some time ago, and over the last 10 weeks or so, what were the biggest changes in the outlook as a result of the declining oil price?
You know, James, I don't think I have a lot to add to the to the answer that I gave earlier. You know, there has not been a material change. Now, I don't want to say that it's not part of the conversation, but, you know, there has not been any meaningful shift in the discussion, the frequency or the tone or the frequency of the discussion that we have been having with our clients. Understanding most of our portfolio is around larger projects, be it in our onshore offshore business or our subsea business. So, you know, they're really looking, you know, yes, it, you know, fluctuations obviously have an impact. I don't know that many people believe that there's been a structural change in the macro. So therefore, you know, there is obviously the emotion around the shorter term impacts, but it has not changed the frequency or the tone or the context of the discussion, because we are talking about larger projects with our clients. Some of our businesses are short, very short cycle, and are regulated as such, and we've all experienced that, for instance, in the Permian Basin. But that's a, you know, that's an important part of our portfolio, but it's only one part of our portfolio. So, you know, net, you know, Jim, I wouldn't say there's been a significant change or really any meaningful change in the tone or the context of the discussion. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit as, even though they've been delayed, as our clients are starting to report their 2019 capital programs. Indeed, I think what I'm expressing to you, we're seeing in the programs that they're reporting. I hope that helps.
No, it does. It does. And as a follow-up, if I could, can you make any distinction between that in terms of North America and the rest of the world? And I'm asking that just to try and understand how insulated, and I do understand on the long-term, long-cycle projects, that you're more insulated than most of the companies we cover from the, you know, vagaries of U.S. CapEx, but can you just spend just a couple of seconds talking about how that distinction is from an international point of view versus a domestic point of view?
Jim, a little bit like the earlier question, you guys really, you answer them for me. So really, you are absolutely correct in everything that you said, and there's really not much more I can add except to reiterate what you said, which is, when we're talking about the larger projects, particularly the projects outside of the unconventionals, to be more specific,
perfect.
You know, there has not been the reactivity or the reaction time or the reactivity is less than on the longer cycle projects or larger capital projects. Again, keeping in mind the onshore offshore portion of our portfolio. I'm gonna say the word because we didn't get the chance to on the call. There wasn't a question, but let's not forget about LNG. 2019 will be a very exciting year for LNG, and you know, certainly these short-term swings that we've experienced don't have any impact on the outlook for those projects.
Perfect. Thank you, guys, and appreciate you squeezing me in. Thanks.
I will now turn the call back to Matthew Seinsheimer for closing remarks.
This concludes our 2019 Financial Guidance Conference call. A replay of the call will be available on our website beginning at approximately 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time today. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact the Investor Relations team. Thank you for joining us. Operator, you may end the call.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.